This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs. Everybody, this is episode number 94 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
So, Hallie, I see that you've had an exciting week.
I have. I really have.
What you been up to?
Well, the good news is I got a new job. So starting on March 20th, I'm going to be the community and content manager for Card Kingdom.
Yes.
Which is really awesome. I've been a customer at Card Kingdom's brick and mortar store for a really long time. I've, you know, been a part of their family, sort of their extended family for a really long time, participated in a lot of their initiatives and things. So I'm really excited to be, you know, really involved, in that regard and, yeah, I'm just really thrilled. I feel like, you know, all the work that I've been doing for the last several years has been leading up to an opportunity like this. And I'm so glad to be, you know, doing what I love, creating content and engaging with the community on behalf of a company that I really appreciate.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm so excited.
And I know how bad you wanted this, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a pretty long application process. And I, you know, I felt pretty confident, but it was really great to hear that I got the job last week.
And what are some of your responsibilities going to be? Like, you have mentioned this really nifty title, but, like, what does it mean?
There are actually a lot of responsibilities, and this is a fairly new position. The current community manager, Chris, he is going to be focusing on just community management for the brick and mortar stores. And I'm taking over some of the online community management responsibilities. So I'm going to be operating the Twitter account, the Facebook account, you know, taking care of our social media channels and engaging with customers online. So I'll be taking those duties over from him. But there are also going to be some new responsibilities that I'm going to have, like taking over our newsletter, you know, polishing that up, editing that, and making sure that gets out every couple weeks, doing some copy editing and copywriting for our website, and also engaging with some of our affiliates. Card Kingdom has a number of affiliated organizations or content creators that they sponsor. So if you use an affiliate code, like if you go to, you know, cardkingdom.com/MTAcast, you can then that then enters an affiliate code into our system. And so then, you know, we get a little note saying that, you know, MTAcast, Magic the Amateuring, sent you here, and they get, you know, a kickback for that. So we currently have I believe there are four content creators that we sponsor. We sponsor Loading Ready Run, The Command Zone, Magic the Amateuring, and Tolarian Community College. So I'll be, you know, collaborating with them, interacting with them. But there are, you know, a lot of projects coming up, like larger projects that our marketing team's going to be working on that I'll be working on as well. And I'm really excited to learn about those and to contribute.
Wow. Now, I have to ask, are you responsible for that really sassy tweet that y'all posted this weekend? Because there's been a lot of talk lately about Modern Masters 2017, which we'll discuss pretty soon. And, yeah, you know, unfortunately, there's been some stories of stores and even people that have been, like, canceling pre-orders and things like that. And they posted this hilarious tweet with the Kermit the Frog sipping the tea gif that was like, you know, if anybody says that we do this, they're just thirsty for clicks. And I lived.
That was not me. I cannot take credit for that. I still have a lot to learn about gifs. So that was not me. I will not be stepping into that role until later this month. But I can say, you know, as a longtime customer at Card Kingdom, as someone who has ordered booster boxes from them for these, you know, high demand sets like these Modern Masters sets, they are really great about pre-orders. They don't cancel. They don't change prices on you. They're really great to their customers.
They certainly are. And I have to say, if you need a crash course on gifts, you know, Chris and I can help you with that because
we can.
We've been there and done it all.
Much appreciated.
So what else have you been doing with yourself?
Oh, God. I had a minor medical emergency this week.
Yeah?
Yeah. So the same day that I found out that I got the job at Card Kingdom, I was eating dinner, and I was not eating dinner alone. I was eating dinner with friends, and I was eating. So I like to cook a lot, and I've made a number of, you know, homemade renditions of foods that I like to eat in restaurants. So I've started making pad thai. So I make pad thai, I get the rice noodles, and I put, you know, shred carrots and green onions and peanuts in it, and, you know, a nice sauce. So I was eating that, and the peanuts that I put in this pad thai are, you know, like halves or quarters of peanuts, so they're pretty big. And as I was eating one, or as I was eating a mouthful that had one of these peanuts in it, someone made me laugh, and, like, the whole half of the peanut just, like, went down my esophagus and got stuck.
Oh, my God.
And, it was not an emergency. Like, I could breathe. It was actually stuck there for, like, almost 2 days because I was just eating and drinking normally, hoping that, okay, something will, you know, push it along. Everything's fine. I can breathe. I'm just in some discomfort. And nothing worked. Like, I ate a lot of food and nothing seemed to push it down. So I was just like, okay, I need to go to the ER. So, I went to see an ear, nose, and throat doctor who had me go through a procedure called an esophagoscopy.
What?
Basically, if you've had an endoscopy or know anyone who's had an endoscopy, it's a very similar procedure. Basically, they put a tube down your throat and it has a little camera on it so they can see, you know, what's down there and possibly get things out that are stuck. So I had to be under anesthesia for the first time in my life, and that was weird because the next day I kept having this like weird brain fog where I would like randomly forget words or like randomly forget the names of my favorite songs. But other than that, it was a pretty smooth procedure. I just like went to sleep, woke up 2 hours later. My throat was really scratchy. They said, yeah, your throat's going to be really scratchy for a couple days. You'll be fine. But apparently, as they were prepping me for surgery, like, one of the doctors, like, asked me to lean my head back. And when I did that, apparently it dislodged itself. So when they put the tube down my throat, they didn't actually find anything. They were like, yeah, it came out at some point between when we took the x-ray and when we actually put the tube down your throat. And I was like, okay, well, I'm glad you went down there and checked anyway. But yeah.
Does that mean you're not going to bill me?
I mean, yes, they probably still will. But, like, fortunately, I have pretty decent health insurance, so I'm not super worried about it. But, yeah, it was a very odd experience, and I'm very thankful to Robert for being my responsible adult, because when you undergo any procedure that requires anesthesia, you have to have a responsible adult around to do things like, you know, drive you places and make sure you don't, you know, nothing weird happens to you while you're sleeping the next night, like make sure you wake up the next morning, that kind of thing. So Robert was there for me. He brought me food. He brought me like all the yogurt and ice cream and applesauce I could eat. So big thanks to him for being there for me in a very weird time.
Yeah, I had to go through an endoscopy last summer, and you know, you mentioned needing a responsible adult, and the other disclaimers are very interesting too. Like, they tell you not to make any important financial decisions.
Yeah.
After coming off the anesthesia, don't do any heavy lifting or any cleaning, and I'm like, I'm done. Yeah. And the thing that stands out to me about the time I had to have an endoscopy was I remember waiting for it to happen, and there was this whiteboard to my right, and it had a list of names, and then there were arrows going up and going down. And everybody else on the board had ones going up and down. And I was the only one that had an arrow pointing down. And I was like, what's up with that? So I remember asking, Katie knows where this is going. And so I ended up asking one of the nurse's aides, I was like, hey, just out of curiosity, how come I don't have both arrows? And he goes, oh, your own endoscopy is only going down your throat. And I was like, where else would it? Oh. Ooh. And so, yeah, so I'm glad in hindsight. Oh, that was a bad one. Looking back, I'm glad that I didn't have both arrows because that would have been a bad time.
Oh, yeah.
So let's get started. So this past Friday, actually, they released the entirety of the Modern Masters 2017 set. And it's very clear that this set is a home run. You know, Hallie and Katie as more of our drafters. You know, what do you guys think of the set?
I'm so excited. I am so, so, so excited. And, you know, just looking at this set, as it was revealed over the last couple weeks, has been a huge nostalgia trip for me because I learned how to play Magic around the time when a lot of these cards were in Standard, like all these cards from Innistrad and Return to Ravnica that were really, you know, impactful in Standard and, you know, really big hits with Magic players. And it's really cool to be able to play with these cards again. Like, it almost feels like drafting another it just seems like it should be like drafting another version of my cube, because my cube is mostly just made up of, you know, cards that I've really enjoyed drafting with over the years. So the set seems really sweet. I haven't had a ton of time to really dig into the commons and take a look at what some of the strategies are, but I mean, it seems like, you know, it's pretty well balanced. And it seems like there are a whole lot of different really cool strategies. So I'm just really looking forward to drafting it as many times as I can.
Yeah, I definitely would agree on all fronts. Like, I was looking through all the, monocolored cards and I was like, these are all really cool. And I'm scrolling down and then I'm like, Advent of the Worm and Sphinx's Revelation. This is like way better now. And Obsidian. Yeah. There's just a lot of really awesome throwback cards. But I have to ask you, Holly, as our human wizard lover.
Yes.
What do you think about the new Snapcaster art versus the old Snapcaster art?
Okay, so I'm the kind of person who thinks that, you know, any card that's made in where the art is clearly supposed to depict a certain person, it should just be that person. I'm a purist when it comes to that. I like my Dark Confidants to look like Bob Marr. I like my Shadow Mage Infiltrators to look like John Finkel. And I like my Snapcaster Mages to look like the original art from Snapcaster Mage. I mean, I think that's really cool. And now we have three different Snapcaster Mage arts, which means there's a lot of potential for mixing and matching. So I know some people like to have, you know, a variety of different art, you know, in their decks. Like, ooh, let's show off, like, as many different arts as we can. And, like, that's kind of cool, but I like things to look the same. And, I mean, I'm fortunate that I was able to, I still have my four Snapcasters from when I first started playing. And I, you know, I'm still going to play with those, but, I mean, this art is cool. It's definitely like, I don't know. It's definitely evocative of a human wizard. So I, you know, I appreciate it. I think it's a pretty good piece of digital art, but like I still love the original.
I would have to agree with that. I'm super excited to draft. I really want to live the dream and play Thragtusk and Deadeye Navigator, but who knows if that'll happen. I was kind of looking like more in depth at the set, and I'm not sure. I felt like with all the other Modern Masters, when I looked at the set, I kind of knew what draft was going to look like and what archetypes were going to be good. And I know that like the Guild Gates will be powerful just for fixing, because there are a lot of multicolored cards in this set. But I wasn't really seeing like very obvious draft strategies. So I think it'll be interesting to actually get in there and draft it and see what everybody else comes up with, as well as, you know, what I come up with, and hopefully it's not horrible. But it's definitely looking awesome and I am so excited for it.
Me too.
Now, Chris, I remember you saying that you were a little disappointed that Maze's End didn't make the cut.
That is a true story. I love Maze's End, and they have the gates in there. And I guess I just think that if they weren't going to use Maze's End, they could have used other ways to have mana fixing. And so, yes, I was very disappointed. And it was nice to know that I wasn't the only one. There were other people that were like, we want Maze's End. It's like, yes, tell wizards what you want. So there was some disappointment over that. Overall, though, the set looks like it's going to be awesome to draft. And I'm trying very hard to be like a responsible adult and not go hog wild to buy a box, but I don't know if that's gonna pan out or not. But overall, I'm very pleased. I'm glad that a lot of cards got some reprints that needed it, updated art for some things, like even Compulsive Research. Love the new art on that. And I'm just very excited to hopefully get in some drafts at my LGS. So they were going to do a midnight release, but then realized that both people were not going to be available at the store that owned the place. So they were like, just kidding, we can't do that. So unfortunately, that will not be happening, but I'm hoping to get in as many drafts as I can and just enjoy the set. I am only sad that they reprinted Damnation because I had one that I wanted to unload, and I'm like, I wonder how much I'm going to get for it now because I'll never play it.
Yeah, I was really excited about the Serum Visions art, especially because I do play Ad Nauseam, and so there's a little bit of the Vorthos in me that the new art on Serum Visions is very Phyrexian themed, and so because I'm using cards like Phyrexian Unlife, I was like, oh my god, the flavor, yes! And so I haven't really been in love with the promo art of Serum Visions. That didn't really, you know, strike your fancy. Yeah, I thought it was one of those. It's like, suit my fancy. I'm like, that's fine. So, that didn't really suit my fancy. And then obviously there's the one we've had forever, and that's fine. But like the first time I saw the Serum Visions art, I was like, I need that in my life. So I'm definitely going to get a playset of those. I really like the reprints, you know, most of all. I think they really addressed a lot of the cards that people need, that people want. You know, obviously there were still some ones that didn't quite make the cut, like Through the Breach, Chalice of the Void, Mitra's Bauble we really could have used. But I do feel like, you know, for the most part, they had their finger sort of on the pulse of modern in terms of, you know, Stony Silence and even older formats like Terminus, Damnation was a big one. Liliana of the Veil has been $100 for as long as I've been around, and sometimes even more than that. And that is a big hurdle to playing Jund in the Abzan decks, and even decks like 8-Rack and even Deathcloud. That's a really big hurdle. Gifts Ungiven has had a new life with Baral Storm, so people are looking to purchase those. Phantasmal Image, that's a card that's always been around for a while. Snapcaster Mage has always been expensive. You know, and so I really hope that this does get some more of these staples on the market. Death Shadow is currently in its prime right now, and I hope that you know, getting these cards out there means more people can play with them, and that way, you know, formats like Modern continue to be healthy. So I really do feel like this set to me was sort of, in my opinion, it was Wizards' way of saying, we hear you. And also, I think it's a big shot of confidence for Modern, too, because there's been a lot of flack lately about the fact that Modern isn't necessarily being played at the highest levels anymore, where, you know, it's not being played at Worlds, it's not being played at the Mox, which we'll talk about later, it's not being played at the Pro Tour, and there was a lot of talk of, like, is this, you know, an early sign that maybe Modern's going away, or maybe they don't care, and I feel like if Wizards didn't care, they wouldn't have given us all of this. We would have gotten, you know, peanuts, and I think this is, you know, Wizard's own way of saying, we support Modern, we want you to keep playing Modern, and I think we needed that.
Yeah.
So the Mox event happened this past weekend, and Magic Online Championship, and it seemed like it was really well received. You know, I happen to follow some very critical people, and they even agreed that they thought it was really well done. Josh Utter Layton won the whole thing. He gets $25,000, immediate platinum status, and they had a nice array of commentators that we don't normally see working together. Patrick Sullivan, who we've never really seen do anything official WotC related. Normally he's a Star City guy. Reed Duke did coverage. Elantris was behind the scenes and had a lot to do with the graphics. From a production standpoint, it seems like it went really well. Hallie and Katie, you watched a little bit of it. What did you think?
I thought it was really, really well done. Just to echo what you said, Aaron, I thought that, you know, Athena did an amazing job on production. I saw Maria Bartholdi doing interviews. She did fantastic. I really enjoyed the commentary as well. I happened to tune in during the semifinals when Patrick Sullivan and Reed Duke were commentating, and I thought they were both just awesome. So I thought it was really well done in general. Like I said, I didn't catch too much of it, but I really thought it was really well put together, and I just really enjoyed watching it. Plus, you know, I've sort of been, you know, now that I'm doing coverage, I'm following player stories a little bit more and following the Pro Players Club. And it was really cool to see Raptor win the event, just because before GP Vancouver, he was silver for the first time in a really long time. He was not sure, like, if he was necessarily going, like, what his Pro Tour future was going to look like. And then he won GP Vancouver, and now he's won the Mox and is now at Platinum again. So I'm super happy for him and really glad that, you know, that was the outcome of this.
Yeah, I feel like it's been a bit, I mean, excluding Vancouver, but I feel like it's been a bit since we've kind of heard from Raptor in terms of final standings and whatnot. So I agree that it was awesome that he won. The production was fantastic. And I want to give a shout out to whoever did the layout for viewers, because like I remember when I first started watching coverage, you know, 4 years ago, kind of around the time that Melissa Del Toro top aided the Pro Tour. And sometimes the layout when you like watch like for older versions of coverage versus like how far we've come now, were just awful. Like you couldn't tell what game you were on. You could hardly see the cards like due to glare, which is obviously not a problem on Moto, but I really loved the layout. They had a picture of the person so that, you know, the people could play on Moto without a camera being on their face. I felt like it was kind of nice that they had like that privacy, but there was still a picture of them, so you know who it was if their name didn't, you know, automatically ring a bell in your head. You could tell what game you were on, you could see the time, you could see the commentators really nicely, and I felt like I really just liked watching a Magic Online tournament like that. Like, I wish they would do more than one a year, because I think it's a really great way to showcase cards as well as commentators from anywhere in the world that maybe we don't hear from as often due to flights and all of that. But I felt like it was just a really great way to display coverage in general, and that it was really well done. And it was really clean and neat. And I also only saw a couple matches, but I loved hearing from Patrick Sullivan again, because it's been a bit since we've heard from him on coverage, and he's a really great commentator. But overall, it was great. I wish they would do more. I'm hopeful that they do more, because it seemed like it was such a big hit with everyone, that I think there's a good chance of that. But yeah, overall, it was really fun to watch. And I need to watch some more interviews. That's what I'm going to do later this week as well. So
I'm looking at the standard metagame here, and it looks like we have 8 copies of Mardu Vehicles, 5 copies of 4 Color. I'm sorry. 5 colors, 4 color copycat, and then some. So what is up with this meta? There was one copy of Black Green Aggro, one copy of Black Green Delirium, one Teamer Marvel, and that's it. Like, you guys.
Pretty dull.
I was surprised, because I'm going through it and like I'm mousing down and like I'm looking at the side of it, and like, you know, there's that little bar that like, if you can tell when you're looking at like a long page, because the bar is really small, and like I'm mousing and I'm like, it's done, like, but where were all the decks? Like, and I look to the right and the bar is so big, and you know, next Monday is the next Banner Restricted announcement, and I mean, are we looking at possibly another ban? Like, this is stale, you guys. It's been stale.
I feel like we won't see another ban. There was a lot of people kind of in a tizzy about the last ban. And, I mean, bans aren't really there. Well, on the surface, bans are not there to make a format less stale. They are there to stop decks from winning too much. But if those are the only decks that are winning because they're the only decks being played, then, you know, who knows? I have a feeling nothing will happen, but I guess we'll find out next week.
Yeah, I just can't. I have a friend who's thinking of buying in the standard, and he's like, you should join me. And I'm like, I'll meet you there. Like, I just can't. So it'll be interesting. You know, I just don't know. You know, it was my understanding, though, that the bans were meant to sort of increase the diversity. And I'll admit that we've seen different decks rise up since then, but I feel like we're still back to the same 2 or 3 deck format. And I'm not really sure, you know, I think Seth Manfield wrote an article just in general about the last bans and was sort of asking if they did what they were intended to do. And, you know, I got the impression from his article that even he was kind of uncertain, where he's like, well, yeah, we got rid of Emrakul and Reflector Mage, but, you know, it's like the same script with a different cast. And it's like, you know, I don't know what it's going to take to mix things up, but, you know, it's clear that maybe the bans didn't work. I'm not really sure. So while this was going on, Chris, you and I went to States this weekend. How did it go?
States was interesting. I went into it not wanting to be very competitive per se. I just wanted to be able to play a deck that I enjoy playing and just hopefully have some sweet games and just get to have good conversations and talk to people. So I decided to play Blutron, and I love Blutron. I really like the upgrades I've made to it and additions and such. So I haven't really had the opportunity to play it in a bigger tournament, so this was the time to do it. So the first round, I ended up playing against a gentleman that was on Eldrazi Tron. We ended up technically going 1-1 draw. And I know that drawing really sucks. So I was like, he's a good dude. We had some really good games together. So I was like, I'm just going to give it to you. So he ended, so it was 2-1. I wished him the best and he continued to do well. So I was like, yes, this works for me. The second round, I got paired against a nice kid that was on a Midnight Guard deck with, what is it? Elemental Mastery, I think is the name of the card. And so you put it on Midnight Guard, basically shit out a bunch of tokens and just make enough to overwhelm your opponent and take the win. So that was very interesting. He was a very nice kid. We had some good conversations about stuff. And I was like, wow, you came up with the deck all by yourself. He's like, yep. So he's really into brewing. So we had some conversations about that. And then the next round, I think, was when I played Lantern. And I played the first game simply to play, because I was like, I haven't played versus Lantern in a while, I think with Blue Tron. So I was like, okay, fine. I need some more experience with this, with the newer build of the deck. And it was very, very disheartening. Every time I was going to rip an answer, he would have a way to just take it away from me. And I was like, damn it. So I was trying to be slick about countering my own spells so that I could draw cards and stuff so I could get what I needed. And there's like, well, I'm going to do this. I'm like, damn it. So it was a very long game. We had 18 minutes left, I think, after the first game. And he's like, next game. And I was like, no. And I was like, honestly, I'm like, I played the first game to humor you. I'm like, I'm not going to play another game. I'm just like, Lantern is just one of those decks that I just don't enjoy. And I know we all have decks that we don't like to play against, but this one, I do not, and this has been the theme for this weekend, this past weekend, I should say, I don't like decks that don't allow me to play Magic. I'm all about people going off fairly early. I know how Modern works, but it just seems like at every turn, it was like, you wanted to play Magic? We're just kidding. That's not going to happen. So I was like, okay, we'll see what the next match is. So then it was Leon and Arbiter and Ghost Quarter, and that was all I needed to know. So I was like, okay, this is going to be a bad time. And it was green-white, and it was more oppressive than I thought it was going to be. But I guess the theme for this weekend seemed to have been Ghost Quarter is going to just ruin all of your games forever and always. And it's never a card that I've ever had a problem with, but it just seems like you just want to take away my land so I can't do anything. And it's like, doesn't matter what deck I'm playing. So that was a little infuriating. And so I was like, okay, I'm not having fun at this juncture, so I'm going to drop. So I ended up dropping. And originally when I was thinking about going down, I wasn't sure if I was going to play or if I was going to try to shadow my judge daddy, Blake, who's been mentoring me. And so I went up to him afterwards and I was like, hey, man, you know, can I still shadow you? And he's like, yeah, just talk to the head judge, make sure it's okay with him. And he said it was fine. So I got to watch Blake take some calls. He was going to let me do some. And I was like, whoa, this is a lot right now. This is a big ass tournament. I don't know. I feel like I would get put on the spot like too quickly and be like, whoa, I'm not like prepared. But I got to see some interesting interactions and such. There was a call where someone had a chalice on two, but they had played a Journey to Nowhere through the chalice and their opponent didn't notice it. And it was like four turns later. So it was kind of a decision about, can we rewind this? Should we? And ultimately, it was like, no, this has gone too far. We're just going to let it be. And then gave them a warning for a mistrigger. So it was just kind of interesting to see what they would do with that situation. We got to do a deck check. And so Blake was kind of explaining to me how you go about doing so without being obvious that you're going to do it. And so that was interesting. So we did the deck check together. So he did one person's deck, I did the other. And then they asked me if I would stay around to do the top 8 deck list. And I'm like, yes. I want to do that. Absolutely. So I got to go through and do all the top eight ones. Unfortunately, one of the people that ended up making top eight was someone that we had deck checked previously. And it was not the deck that I had reviewed. So when I went back through, I noticed there was a mistake. And someone had not written out a full card name. And it was a card that had multiple cards with the same name legal in the same format. So we ended up having to give that person a game loss. And that kind of sucked. But it felt like it was good experience and good practice for something like that. And just kind of getting to talk to the judges about different things that they do. They were showing me how to use the paper cutter to make sure all the stuff falls in line so all the tables are all in the right order. I'm like, wow, I thought this was just cutting paper. This is like another level now. Okay. So it was just like interesting trying to learn some stuff from them. So I feel like I got some good experience for judging there, and I'm just looking forward to taking my test in 2 weeks. So hopefully when we record on the 20th, I will have some good news. But all in all, I'm very glad that I went, even though I didn't perform quite as well, because everything was an experience, both with playing and with trying to get this judge thing on the way. So I was very happy that I ended up going to States, and I just look forward to hopefully being a judge very soon.
Yeah, you thought he was going to test you right there.
Mm-hmm. He keeps teasing. Every time he sees me, he's like, I want to test right now. I'm like, no, not at all. And but he did bring up a very good point to me that I've been thinking about since then. He was like, well, he's like, even if you did fail, he's like, at least you would have the experience to know what to expect for next time. And he's not wrong, but I would rather just take it when I'm like, I've slept well, I've studied well, I know what's going on, I'm ready. And that way, if I fail, I can be like, okay, you did all the prep and you failed and that's okay. And now you know what to expect for next time. So I'm just really hyped because we started talking about what we were going to discuss at the judge conference and what different people are going to talk about. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm so excited. So I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm hoping that I'm going to give you the goal of our last episode. So this is episode 94. I'm going to give you, you can do it by episode 100, can't you?
Oh, I hope so.
Okay, because, I mean, we want to ride off into the sunset. You know, mm-hmm. Hallie's going to be the content manager for Card Kingdom. You're going to be an L1. Like, let's give the people what they want, you know? Like,
I really, really want to. But it's gotten to the point that I'm being a crazy person about it, because I was like, do you know that I sat and I recorded myself reading all my judge flashcards and going over the two-headed giant, like, tournament rules and the mandatory, like, minimums to...
Katie's like, I haven't even read those.
Yeah, those two-headed giant rules, they
seem to
get you. I read them
you.
Every time I go to a two-headed giant thing, because they're so nitpicky.
Yeah, I was just like, okay, this is definitely going to be on there, and I've heard some warnings about that. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a thing, so I'm like, okay. So now I have it on my phone as an MP3, so I'm going to set it up to repeat while I'm sleeping, so I can retain more knowledge.
Chris is the most dedicated L1 I've ever heard of.
I'm trying. I seem to be the only one out of our little group that has specifically made their commitment to Sparkle Motion like a thing. So I'm trying to do it.
So my plan initially was to go to two different States events, because there was Wisconsin States, which was happening at a game store close to my apartment, and then there was Illinois States, which was happening about 30 minutes away from Chris's apartment, and so I was ideally going to do both. I got hit with a really bad cold, like Thursday evening, Friday morning, and by Saturday morning, I was just in really bad shape. Like, I was sneezing constantly, my nose was running, I was light sensitive, like my eyes were watering, and I had even posted a Facebook status, and I was like, would you guys go to an event like this? And it was unanimously like, don't do it. Like, I think the best comment that I saw was, your opponent didn't sign up for that and you don't want to get everybody else sick. And I was like, that's a really good point. So I spent most of Saturday in bed, in the dark, just sleeping a lot and being on various syrups to get better. And by Sunday morning, I was feeling a lot better. So I ended up hopping the train to come see Chris. And then we drove down to Pastimes together and I took ad nauseum. I started off really, really hot. I was 3-0. felt really, really good. I beat Burn. I beat Jund. I beat Chris's friend from high school on Abzan. I was feeling really, really good about myself. Everybody was really, really sweet. And then I got my first loss to a young man who I'd seen before around the local scene. And all I know is he started off with a brain in the jar. And when you see brain in a jar, you know you're about to see some fuck shit. Like, you know,
I think I know what this is, though.
You know, and then you start going over it in your mind. You're like, okay, boom, bust, alive and well, beck and call, profit and loss. What are we dealing with here? Like, you know something dumb's about to happen. But all I keep seeing is burn spells. Like, he's basically just burning me. It's like bolt, helix, bolt, snap, bolt, and that's it. So I'm like, okay, well, maybe it's just like a brain burn deck. I'm like, okay. So I'm not really sure how to sideboard. So I sideboard basically thinking it's a burn deck. So I put in my Leyline of Sanctities. I put in an extra unlife and things like that. And I managed to get there game two. And so game three, I'm still not really seeing any brokenness. Like, I'm still just seeing very fair kind of Jeskai shenanigans, like Colonnade, Dispel, you know, what have you. So we go to game three, and we get to a point where I have to cast spoils to find another combo piece. And I'd had some really lucky spoils pulls throughout the day. Like, I had spoils once for, like, Ad Nauseam, and it was the top card, which felt really good. And so I don't remember what combo piece I was missing, but I remember needing to do it. And the card I needed was only, like, five cards down. And I was like, oh, sweet. But then I look at the cards that I had to exile, and one of them was Simeon Spirit Guide. And I had a Spirit Guide in hand that I needed to just cast ad nauseum. So that's one Spirit Guide. One's been exiled because of spoils. Oh, crap. I only have two left. I don't have enough to cast Lightning Storm. And I'm just like, shit. And the probability of that is so low, but sometimes it happens. And I was like, if I didn't exile my spirit guide, you would be dead right now. And so, really sweet guy, nice guy, gave a handshake, 3-1. Then I beat Affinity, 4-1. And then my sixth round. So he sits down and he's sort of, you know, getting himself together. And the judge goes, you know, round six begins, you know, you may begin. And he's going through his sideboard and he's de-sideboarding. And I mean de-sideboarding as, like, replacing sleeves, as in he doesn't have enough sleeves, and he's simply taking sleeves off, and, like, and mind you, the timer's going. So I'm sitting there, and I'm trying to be nice, and I'm like, all right, maybe he had a long round. And I'm like, yeah, maybe not, you know? And he, but the thing is, he's not even acknowledging it. There's not like, oh, hey, last round was a killer, sorry, I gotta do this. Doesn't even look at me. He's just like, put my sleeve on here, put my sleeve, I'm just sitting there. So then he finishes, and I'm like, oh, good, we're about to get started. And then he pile shuffles. The timer's still going. Everybody around us is playing. And again, he's not acknowledging me. There's not like, oh, I'm sorry the sideboarding took so long. I've got a pile shuffle. Doesn't even look at me. Like, just goes straight from sideboarding to pile shuffling. And I'm just sitting there, and I'm watching the timer, and I'm like, nah, it's cool. I'll just sit here. So he ends up finally gets his stuff together, still doesn't acknowledge me. He's on Banned Eldrazi, and then he plays an Eldrazi Sky Spawner, or the blue one with the pregnantness is happening.
Yep, that's the Sky Spawner.
And then he's looking around, and he can't find tokens. He didn't bring tokens. So he's ruffling around, and he pulls out like some bent sleeves, and he goes, that's my token. That's Flyer, right there. And I'm like, girl. So he ends up beating me game one, which felt really, really bad because Eldrazi is supposed to be a really good matchup for me, and I tend to do very well against that deck. So in addition to losing to what I perceive to be a good matchup, I've had to deal with the pile shuffling, the sideboarding, the not acknowledging me. Everything just sort of really put me on tilt. We end up going to game three, and I made a mistake with my scrying where I scryed away a fog that I really shouldn't have, and I discarded something to Reality Smasher that I shouldn't have. So I had made some mistakes there, and that whole thing just really put me on tilt. So I was 4-2 at that point. Then I go on to the final round, and I have a possibility of making top 16. I think maybe 1-5-2 made top 8, and I was pretty sure it wasn't going to be me. So I end up facing this young man who I had seen throughout the day, and he also ended up being on Banned Eldrazi. Game 1, game 2, we go to game 3. Feeling very good at this point. Everything's looking up. I had multiple ad nauseums in hand, but I had a Phyrexian Unlife out, so I knew if he had counterspells, I could sort of get rid of them. So sure enough, I cast the first ad nauseum, and he Disdainful Strokes it. That's fine. Next turn happens. I go to do it again. It resolves. And I'm thinking I'm home fucking free. I'm 5-2. Nothing can go wrong. So I cast ad nauseum. I hold priority. I cast Lightning Storm. I discard enough lands to do 21 in damage because he's at 20. And he responds by casting a card called Blessed Alliance. And I'm just, I did not see this coming. I was just like, what? And he goes, yeah, I'm a gain for life. Now, it was my understanding as an ad nauseum player that when you put counters on Lightning Storm and you declare how many counters are on it, that you can't add any more to it. And that's how it was always explained to me. That's how the primer on Salvation makes it sound like. I've had other judges explain it that way. I boarded out all my packs of negation. So I'm going, okay, he's just gained 4 life. He's now at 25. My Lightning Storm's only doing 21. I'm fucked. And I got upset at that point. I was just like, did you seriously bring in Blessed Alliance? I have no creatures. Like, that's something you bring in against, like, Bokals, Death Shadow. I was like, why did you bring that in against me? And he's like, I don't know. I didn't really have anything else. And I'm like, and I was just, I'll admit, I did not handle it very well. I ended up apologizing to him afterwards. I did lose my cool, and I'm not proud of that, but I did get very upset. And so in my mind, I just lost. And I didn't think to call a judge to make sure that the card works that way. I just assumed that it did based on what I had been told before. And so I basically lost. I assumed that I'd lost, and I scooped. So I signed the slip. The kid's elated. He's 5-2. He's stoked. I'm furious. So I go to sit down, and her friend, Chris's friend Blake, one of the judges, comes over and agrees with me. He's just like, yeah, that's the way Lightning Storm works. You couldn't have done anything, you know, whatever. And I felt bad about it the whole way home. I felt bad about the way that I treated him, my opponent. I felt bad about what happened. And then this morning, I just asked one of my friends, Eric, who happens to be an L3. I was like, can I ask you a question? And he goes, sure. And I tell him what happened, and he goes, well, what, you didn't have any more lands? And I was like, no, I had plenty of lands. I was like, I had lots of lands. And he's like, well, why didn't you do that? And I was like, cause I was under the impression that you couldn't do that. And he goes, oh no. He's like, you totally could have won that. And I'm like, what? And so I made a public Facebook post cause I know a lot of judges. And rather than asking them all individually, I was like, what do you guys think? And unanimously, everybody was like, you should have won that. Like, because when he cast Blessed Alliance, I could have either let it resolve and then Lightning Storm was still on the stack and I could have then added more counters, or I could have even in response to the Blessed Alliance put more counters on it and still won the game. And I was just like, are you serious? And I've been playing this deck for over a year, and not only have I never had this come up, I really thought I knew what the deal was. And so it just really made me feel terrible, where I was like, how did I not know this? Like, how have I gone to multiple GPs, day 2 multiple GPs, and I don't know how my card works? Like, it was just so embarrassing. And so going forward, I know that that's now the case, and that I can do that, and that I have options if that comes up again. But the whole experience was just very tilting. You know, I had not had an outburst like that in a while. I completely lost my cool, and I felt very bad about that, and I was very ashamed of that, because I have come a very long way in that area. And a lot of that didn't even have anything to do with my opponent. You know, I was mad at myself that I boarded out all my packs. I didn't call the judge. It was all me. Like, I was really upset at myself, and instead of taking it out internally and beating myself up, I lashed out. And so I was just upset for a number of reasons, and I admit that I kind of carried it over into today, and today was very shitty as well. I'm starting to shake all of that off, but I effectively could have gone 5-2 if I had just called a freaking judge and figured out how my card worked. So I don't have any events to look forward to until June, so I'm kind of excited about that. Like, I'm looking forward to just... That was the kind of event where you don't sign up for another one after that for a while. You're like, mm-hmm. All right, I need to calm the fuck down and learn from this, and give me 2 months of not doing anything serious, and just sort of get better for Vegas, I guess. So there was an article that came out the other day that I really, really enjoyed by a young lady named Gemma Hammonds. And I've seen her around on Twitter and on YouTube before, and she's very, very lovely, and she's recently started writing. And she wrote an article for Hipsters of the Coast called Why Cosplay Matters, and it was about Christine Sprinkle, largely. But she also went on to elaborate what Christine and what cosplay means to her. And this was fascinating. Like, she basically equated what Christine does to femininity in geek spaces, and how a lot of times women feel the need to hide that part of themselves to fit in with the boys when they want to do geeky things. You know, there's this weird double standard where, like, if a girl shows up to play games and she's very pretty and she's very dressed up, you know, that sort of feeds that whole, guys use that to feed that whole fake geek girl you know, narrative, but they also like girls like that. And so there's this weird double standard. And she was talking about how one of the reasons she enjoys Christine and other cosplayers is that they own their femininity. You know, they are entering these geek spaces and saying, I am wearing a full paint, a face of makeup. I am wearing this outfit and I'm not sorry about that. And I really, really enjoyed this. And, you know, Chris, I want to start with you because when I first met you, you would always be painted for the gods. Like you would spend like an hour getting ready before events and you'd always look really, really nice. And I really, really admired that about you. And, you know, did that, you know, factor in at all? Like, you know, when you read this article and you see things about femininity and makeup, like, what do you think about that?
I would say it's part of it, to a degree, because I started noticing, and not that I've ever been outright treated differently in magic, but just that I noticed there was a different vibe, for sure. Like, if I were to show up and be like, you know, eyebrows on fleek, like, we good, as opposed to like, I'm just going to roll out of bed, take a quick shower and go to this event. It just felt like people talked to me differently when I wasn't presenting like super overly feminine. And I feel that that's unfortunate because then I feel bad for women that maybe that's how they always dress and that's how they always are and that people may read them differently because of it or treat them differently. And I don't see why that should even be a factor. And having someone like Christine Sprinkle, who is out there being like, this is something I love to do. This is how I like to be. And to show other people that this is okay. You can be like this. You can still be respected and you are no different than anybody else. And I think that that's a really awesome thing. I had considered over the weekend maybe trying to put a little more effort into my appearance like I used to. And then I was like, I don't know that I want to deal with all that. Like, I just kind of want to be chill and not have to necessarily, not that I worry that much about what my opponents think is whatever, but I just kind of wanted to not have to have any, I guess not even odd interactions, but just different than what I've experienced probably in the last couple months, for sure. But it would be an interesting experiment, I think, to actually collect some like so-called data from being like, okay, present one way at one event, present a different way at another, and try to gauge if responses are different or anything, because it just always felt like there was something that was different. And I would rather someone not even take me more seriously, but not make it about how I look, make it about how I'm playing, make it about the fact that I'm here to play a game just like you are. I'm not here to look good for you. I'm here to look good for me. So it's just one of those weird things. But I definitely appreciate Gemma writing this article because I guess I never really had considered how important, like, I know that cosplay is important, but just how important it can be to some other people and the empowerment that comes from it and the power that it gives to other people. So I really appreciate her pointing out something that I personally just was unaware of, and that's really awesome. So maybe this will get other people to see that cosplay really is a serious thing, and for reasons other than just this person is dressing up and taking on a persona, it can really mean a lot more than that, because I feel like people don't always appreciate it for being anything more than just dressing up in a costume.
Yeah, I don't think I ever thought of it that way either, interestingly enough. I've always had a tremendous amount of respect for cosplayers just because they are capable of doing things that I'm clearly not capable of, just in terms of, you know, creating these really elaborate costumes for themselves. Like, I really appreciate that you can do these tremendously creative things, sometimes even with, you know, normal household items, like what MJ Scott often does. And I have a tremendous amount of respect for them for that, but I never thought to equate that to or relate it to the culture of geek femininity, I guess, or to really think about it in the context of that. And I'm really glad that, you know, Gemma brought that up and talked about it in that context. And, you know, this article did resonate with me really strongly. I agree very strongly with the phrase, I was afraid of becoming a woman, or at least that's how I felt when I was growing up. I definitely was the teenage girl who said, I'm not like other girls. I don't want to be like other girls, or, you know, other girls are all like this and I don't, you know, I'm not like that. So I want to be something else. And I think a lot of that, you know, was how I ended up realizing that, you know, I could be non-binary or I could be gender non-conforming. But, you know, there are obviously a lot of other reasons behind that, but that was one of them. And I think hearing another person talk about that feeling that, you know, a lot of the times women are sort of feel forced into these boxes. I mean, I've been talking a lot about gender with my mom. My mom is in her 50s and working to understand how complicated gender is, because when she was growing up, it wasn't that complicated, or so she thought. And so we've been having all these great conversations about gender. And the one thing I've been trying to tell her is that society often tries to put people in boxes, and society often tries to tell us, hey, you know, if you don't act a certain way or you don't look a certain way, you're not going to be labeled as a woman, or you're not going to be seen as a woman, or you're going to be, you know, perceived in a way that you don't want to be. And I think that's what leads to this fear in so many people, that we do worry that, you know, if we do look or act a certain way, that people are going to make assumptions about us, and sometimes really dangerous and harmful assumptions. And I am really glad that Gemma brought this up, because I do think that goes a long way to dispelling that myth and, you know, making people realize that we are multifaceted people and we're capable of having lots of different characteristics that aren't thought to go together, really.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the kerfuffle that's been going on around Teen Vogue lately. You know, there's been some condescending comments where it's like, oh, you know, Teen Vogue is suddenly political. And it's like, well, you can be a teenage girl and like dolls or like Justin Bieber or like makeup and also care about, you know, universal healthcare or care about, you know, what happens to black folks and brown folks. And to say that, you know, to say that teenage girls are only capable of just one thing, that you either have to be, you know, the serious political commentator or you have to be, you know, a complete girly girl, is really kind of condescending. And I think even the editor of Teen Vogue has gone on record many times of saying that, you know, girls are, you know, multifaceted creatures, and that when we put them in boxes, we really do them a disservice, especially at really young ages, you know, by telling them that they can only be one thing. And I really appreciate the way that she talked about this. And I think the thing that also kind of hit me where I live is where she mentions the fact that it takes a lot of courage to put yourself out there as a cosplayer, because the criticism that you receive and even the compliments that you receive are about your body. Mm-hmm. You know, like if you're a blogger and somebody doesn't like your thoughts or somebody doesn't like your words, you know, that's one thing. If you do podcasting or if you do videos, you know, somebody might have a problem with like your face, but they may not see past the window. You know, they may have a problem with your voice or whatever. But when you're a cosplayer, you're literally, every part of you is up for public consumption. You know, your arms, your feet. You know, I see some of the loopy comments that Sprinkle gets. You know, the weird foot fetish folks are like, send me your boots. And like, you know, then you have, it's real. You know, but also you see some of the negative side when it comes to black cosplayers. People say, well, you can't cosplay this because you're black, or you can't cosplay this because you're fat. You know, that's such a personal thing to literally put your body out there and have your stomach and your neck and your face. That's just so personal, and it's so brave that cosplayers do that, because I can barely handle some of the criticism that I get, much less if people were commenting on my weight or my thighs or whatever it might be. And I had never really thought of that before. And so I really appreciated that Gemma brought that up, because I don't think we give cosplayers enough credit in that regard.
Yeah, I felt like Gemma summed up like my whole teenage decade in this article. Like, when I was growing up, I was a major tomboy, and I liked, you know, hanging out with guys and playing video games, and I felt like the way that, you know, teenage boys talked about girls who wore makeup or high heels to school in high school, like, I felt like I wanted to be better than that by making myself more like a boy to fit in better. And I really like how Gemma addresses that. And cosplay for me wasn't a thing that helped me grow into my womanhood. Like, I was kind of doing that through other faucets and other avenues. But I really like how she connected a lot of how I felt growing up to words. Because it wasn't, I mean, it's not even something I've ever even thought about. Like, I was just like, yeah, I was a tomboy for a while and then, you know, kind of grew into myself and found out that I like makeup and like that was all fine and good. But I did feel like I was forcing myself to try and be something that I wasn't necessarily actually feeling when, you know, I would talk differently around the guys because I just wanted to be one of the guys and hang out. And I think this is a good article for men and women to realize, just because I think that sometimes that happens a lot in our community now. Like, I know that Mrs. Mulligan gets a lot of shit for wearing tank tops to events. And she doesn't have to wear, like, a scroungy old t-shirt like a lot of guys wear to a magic event just to fit in at a magic event. Like, she can wear whatever she wants, and so can, you know, everybody else. And I feel like, you know, it just goes to show that you shouldn't have to make yourself smaller to fit into the magic world, because the magic world is very big and you should be able to be yourself no matter how big or small that may be to you. I thought this article was amazing. I hope that a lot of people read it because it just hit home with me on a lot of different points. And I thought that she wrote it very, very nicely.
Yeah, the thing that made me kind of come out of my shell wasn't cosplay. I will never forget this because I just bought a Funko of her yesterday, but Poison Ivy in Batman the Animated Series. I remember being a sexually confused little boy, knowing I was a girl for the most part, but you know, I remember watching that show and here was somebody who was, you know, I was seeing the things that I would need to do even at an early age. You know, I was seeing the things that I would need to do to fit in, or so that I thought, you know, the sort of stifling yourself or the making yourself smaller. And here was a character that was sexy and intelligent and wanted to sort of take the boys on her terms. And, you know, I remember the episode Harley and Ivy, where Harley and Ivy sort of, you know, go after the men's club and they shoot a bazooka at this car full of dudes who try hitting on them. And I just thought that was fascinating, that you could be all of these things, that you could be complicated, you know, that you could be smart and sexy and complicated and have issues and still, and just be all of those things. I thought that was fascinating. And I remember there was an episode of Batman the Animated Series called House and Garden where Ivy really wanted a family, but she wanted it on her terms. She wanted to grow her babies, you know? And Batman's going, "You're a freak." And she's just really, "No, I want a family, but I want it my way." And I just really respected that character so much. And that cartoon, you know, still, you know, makes me feel a lot of things. And you can still watch it on Amazon Prime, which is awesome. And so, you know, that was the character, that was the geek icon, the thing that sort of made me come out of my shell and really sort of embrace my femininity. Because even growing up, I was like, well, this is the way it has to be. It's like, you know, I'm going to wear all these clothes and I can't have fun and I can't be anything. And it's like, no, you can be all of those things and it's okay. And, you know, and we've talked about that before, just in terms of like social justice. You know, people feel like you have to choose. And it's like, no, you really can be multiple things. You know, you can support cops and also support Black Lives Matter, and you can be funny and smart and sexy and gaming. And you know, the moral of the story is, you know, you really can have it all. So anything else on our minds before we wrap up the show?
I have a thing.
What's the thing?
So I wanted to give a shout out to an L1 who's living in Billings, Montana, which is one of our biggest cities, for those of you who don't know anything about Montana. His name is Brock, and he has put together a tournament series that I'm really excited about for the competitive players in Montana. And I thought that, you know, if anybody's listening, this might be something for you to do in your area, because it sounds like a lot of fun and like it's going over really well. So what he has put together is a championship circuit series. PPTQs have kind of been losing their steam for a lot of players. There's not a huge draw for them to want to go to tournaments that are, you know, 2 or 3 hours away just to play a PPTQ, where maybe the prizes aren't the greatest, and then drive home after losing or whatever it may be. So what this is an 8-tournament series with 2 standard, 2 modern, 2 legacy, and 2 sealed. So there's a little something for everyone. And it's kind of modeled after the Star City Tour, where top players get different point values based on how they do. So first gets 10 points, second point place gets 8, et cetera, et cetera. And everybody who plays in the tournament gets 1, even if they don't place in the top 8. 1 point, that is. And he is keeping track on an Excel sheet of everybody's point systems, who's doing how well. And at the end of it, the top 16 players are going to have a tournament that will decide the championship of Montana. It's going to be a cash prize. And part of the entry fees for each of the other 8 tournaments are going towards the cash prize. And there's also like a really fancy trophy that's like made out of glass and etched and looks like it could be like a pro tour trophy. and so it's just kind of a really good way to get all of the community involved. I mean, he reached out to, I think, 6 different stores to have these tournaments in, so everybody could have, you know, players visiting their area of Montana. And I'm really excited to see how it goes. I know they had 26 people show up for the first tournament, which I think was Legacy, and it's getting some judges some good experience judging things that aren't PPTQ, since you have to be an L2 to judge those. And I'm really excited just to see how it turns out, because I know a lot of people are really excited about it. I know states has not been drawing in the most people, seeing as there's like 6 states a year or something now. So I think that it's a really good way for the community to kind of come together. And I know the players are making it happen just as much as Brock is. So I am excited to see how it ends up for everyone.
That's fantastic. I hope it works out. Because I know, that you've been trying, you know, when you were living there, you were certainly doing your part, Katie, to like grow the judge program. And you had mentioned how difficult it can be and with the distance and how, you know, stores aren't always close together and things like that. And so I'm hoping this really takes off. It sounds like your community could really use it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we had something very similar in Seattle, actually. In 2013, in the spring and summer, we had this program called the Seattle Metro Championships, where a whole bunch of stores in Western Washington, like in the greater Seattle area, would have these standard tournaments like every week. And it was really great for the community. Like, I remember I got to meet a lot of really cool people in the area who I would not normally meet. And it brought a lot of business into stores that didn't normally get a ton of business. So it was really cool and really great for our community. And I remember people were really sad that it didn't happen like the next couple of years. So I hope that, you know, that kind of model succeeds in your state.
Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking of streaming the Legacy Challenge this weekend. My friend, Kate Donnelly is available, so she may join me for some company and some things like that. I haven't decided what I'm going to play yet. Probably Dredge, but, I have been looking around at other lists just to see what I might want to try. Kate might get me to play, 12 Posts for the first time, which I've never played before, which is like Tron on speed.
Yes.
So imagine Tron lands, but with locuses. It's a really good time. So I may do that. I'm not really sure. So if you have nothing to do, come swing by twitch.tv/originalestrus and come watch me play Legacy on Saturdays. It should be a really good time.
Cool.
So if anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you all and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalcanSan. That's HalcanSan. You can also find me on Instagram and Snapchat at HalcanSan. And starting March 20th, I'll be behind the wheel of all the Card Kingdom accounts.
Yes.
That's going to be really fun.
And I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at MeanMugger. That's MeanMugger. Or on Twitch, twitch.tv/MeanMuggerMTG. And if you want any more information on how to get something like this tournament series going in your area, feel free to shoot me an email at katie.neil14@gmail.com.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at THKRIZ. My Gmail is yothkriz@gmail.com. My Twitch channel is twitch.tv/decriz. My blog is backtablesmtg.wordpress.com. I should have a new post out as of when this episode airs. And I also have a Snapchat. It's Cryptic Command with K's.
And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at Original Estrus. That's OriginalEstrus. You can email me at OriginalEstrus@gmail.com. Snapchat, Original Estrus, twitch.tv/OriginalEstrus. The show is on Twitter at the GF Bracket. You can email us your questions at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. And you can find us every Friday at GatheringMagic.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.